The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY10 with no spaces. You'll save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout to save some scratch. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, I think we're live. Yeah, I think we're ready to go. Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. But the QA is the important part. Welcome back. I took a week off last week, and then the week before that was a pajama podcast. There was like a 2-week block of us just like being super chill. We got news, we got reviews, we got all the tech and geekery to talk about, and I'm already seeing an incredible list of names in the live chat right now. Simply Your Device is saying, hey, it's Tom from Mr. Snarky. We have a couple stories I might be getting a little snarky on. It's funny. It's like my reputation precedes me. We've got Control Alt Clay. We've got JMan150 with a rest in peace for Queen Elizabeth. Like, lots of news happened over the last week. Barry Johnson saying what's up. We've got 2Turbo. We've got Arthur Lee. We've got Control Alt Clay. JMan. Simon Says Hypno. Twin Folk Tech. Simply Your Device is bumping this. Simply Your Device, I am at work and the only person here, so I'm going to have this cranked up. I don't know that I can get that crunk for a tech podcast. The kids still say crunk, right? That's still a thing. We got Farhan, we've got Ben Pai, we've got... Barry Johnson. It's Romper Room. Snorkel is saying, hey, what's up? He's saying hi there, all. So I think we're going to have a lovely conversation about the tech news because we've got a lot of tech news to get through. But of course, today is September 12th. Yesterday was sort of a historical day for Americans to remember things that have happened in our country's past. And then overseas, our friends in the UK, we're seeing the changes. My wife and I were saying is like, hey, we're Americans. We don't have any close relationship to the royal family outside of like the occasional gossip rag story about royal family people. But it's just kind of interesting to us that a figurehead of UK life and politics and history, our entire lives has been the same person. Like, we've never seen anything like this kind of change before. So again, in all times of change, we hope that everyone over there is happy and safe and healthy and isn't getting too roped up into the shenanigans of rich aristocracy. I don't know what else to comment on for those kinds of things. Dave Prince, those kids are now 27, Juan. Yes. Yes, they are. All right. Simply Your Device, was there an Apple event last week? We talked about Apple stuff. This show that TK and I do on Thursdays, Best of Our Week. So I don't know that I'm going to hit that too hard. I kind of feel like that's been talked out pretty well. But obviously, when we get into the gadget block, I want to leave some time. We can do a little bit more of the Q&A, the question and answer. We've got a lot of news in this news block. And then because I was a week out, I do want to spend just a little bit of extra time, because I usually do anyway, talking out some of the housekeeping, because I had a lot of stuff go up. And it's not just let me promote my other articles and videos on my podcast, but it also kind of helps feed into some of the conversations that we're going to have. We get in the gadget block. I'm spending time with a really interesting trio of devices. I mean, you might have seen in the thumbnail. We've got the Poco M5. I'm finally getting to kind of crack into this a little bit more. I missed the embargo release date, but it's an interesting budget phone. Some thoughts on that. Obviously, we've got to spend a little time on the Xperia 5 Mark IV because everybody on Reddit kind of hates my hot takes on how the Sony situation isn't as bad as other tech reviewers are making it out to be. And then a device that I'm kind of circling around into, like it was out before, it already kind of had its moment on YouTube for relevant SEO and videos, but the folks at Unihertz sent over the Titan Slim, and I'm using it, I really feel like I have some thoughts to share on a keyboard phone, especially one that's this inexpensive. So when we get into the gadget block, we've got a trio of those devices and then a whole bunch of things that are still sort of sitting on my desk. I am way behind on videos, so it's been pretty rough. Dave Burns, the Sony situation is bad, ? Well, again, if you're a major YouTuber with hundreds of thousands or millions of subscribers, then you have to say you should buy Sam Apple, right? If you do anything to anger the Samsung and Apple overlords, your access to Samsung and Apple products will be diminished, and then you will make less money. You'll make less money on the YouTubes. And you can't make up for that kind of money deficit by talking and saying nice things about Sony. So immediately, while people run out of their way to call me shill, let me tell you how much less money I make just trying to be fair. I mean, again, it's like there are totally legitimate criticisms to be had with the Xperia 5 Mark IV. Do any of them rise to the level of outright deal breaker? I don't think so. But that, of course, means that I'm persona non grata in a lot of communities on Reddit, because I'm not just saying, buy a Sam Apple. They're better because more people own the Sam Apples. J-Man150, I am not familiar with any of these words. I'm familiar with these words, not in this order. J-Man writes, Juan, did you see someone left a jar of marmalade a few days ago when everyone was leaving flowers? It was on Sky News. I don't know what any of that means. I'm sorry. I really want to appreciate what that might be. But I'm going to get on with the tech commentary, if that's okay with everybody here. Jumping into some housekeeping, I'm going to screen share right here. And one of the bigger stories that I actually published on SomeGadgetGuy.com was a look back at the LG V60 in 2022, still the most feature complete. I took a fond look back at one of the most feature-rich powerhouse phones that's ever been made. So this write-up just kind of helped me start spelling out some of the ideas that I've been having on some of my future coverage, because I'm trying to get just a little bit more granular about some of the comparisons and some of the things that I've been working on in my videos. So this next video, Steam Deck versus gaming phone, the better portable gaming experience, I wanted to try and do something a bit more fair. Obviously, the Steam Deck is the winner. I mean, it's built to play games, but I think a lot of people overlook phone gaming because they're woefully undereducated as to what the current state of mobile gaming looks like. And there are some really interesting wins that you can get with phones, like performance per watt, refresh rates, and depending on the games you play, there are some very interesting perks to playing games from a smartphone. Then, just switching gears, I've been spending a lot of time with the Phio BTR7. It's a little Bluetooth headphone DAC, but with these new THX amps, it is rocking my socks. So we've got a video on that. That thing's a beast. And then I did another write-up. This is an article. It's not necessarily a review of the Axon 40 Ultra, but more just how do we position the phones that we're talking about. So this is called an Ultra, the Axon 40 Ultra, but it's also one of the less expensive premium tier phones. So the price point it comes in at competes almost directly with the base model Galaxy S22. So what does that mean? Like, where do we position this? A lot of people are going to say, well, it's called an Ultra, so I need to compare it against a Note 22 Ultra. And I don't know that that's fair. So we've got to do some pros and cons and where does it stack up against the competition. But this is, I mean, I'm obviously using the ZTE as a part of the conversation. But this is, again, it's another one of those articles that I tried to sort of more broadly kind of compare the way that we talk about phones. That was last week's Pajama Podcast. Then I wrote another article, can we finally admit that in-display fingerprint sensors on phones are terrible and that no company should use them? And I love all the people, all the stands coming up, but my phone is the perfect and it's always great and I never have problems with my fingerprint sensor, even though it's not as good. It's fine for stuff. And you're like, yeah, I mean, you can say it's sort of okay, but like it's an inferior technology. Putting a fingerprint sensor into a screen is making the screen more expensive and the security process more complicated, and it's more muscle memory training. There's no real upside there, and anyone who says otherwise is completely and totally wrong. Then we took a first look at the Sony Xperia 5 Mark IV, which we're going to be talking about later in the podcast. And then I wanted to take just a second on this one. I had some really bad experiences with the Eufy Solo Indoor Cam P24. This is their pan and tilt indoor security camera. We went out on a trip and we set up these cameras inside. They're plug-in cameras. They don't have batteries built into them. And literally the first day that we were gone, we had a scheduled power outage with the power company and the cameras never came back. And I know that the operation of this camera is to eventually kind of reconnect itself to Wi-Fi. All of the cameras that we got nuked themselves and refused to connect back to our Wi-Fi. So it was a very frustrating experience. Now, this video is notable. The Eufy Solo Indoor Cam P24. Not just because of the commentary, because obviously my commentary is very erudite and very intelligent and very well considered. This was in the middle of the peak heat wave here in Southern California. In our neighborhood, we got up to 106 degrees one day, and our AC was busted. So even with all of the windows like closed and blinds drawn and turning off anything that might generate heat, this thing, inside my home, it was still running like 85 to 88 degrees at like 9 a.m. So it was stonking hot. And I was just melting. And it was so hot on the walls that I couldn't reliably use my workstation or my cameras. I'm actually having to replace my uninterruptible power supply because it was on the back wall of my house that gets stupid hot in summer heat, in afternoon heat. So this entire video was shot, was edited, was rendered off of the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. So the Xiaomi 12S Ultra, we accomplished an entire video. I plugged in my Rode mics. I had fans going the entire time just because it was too hot in here. So the audio that you'll hear is audio with fans running. And then I also threw just a little music bed under it. But the funny thing is like, if you look at this video, it doesn't look that different from my main camera, like my Panasonic's. And then lastly, because it's been so hot, we've got a smartphone camera video torture test. Did the Xperia 5 Mark IV fail? And I ran some commentary. This was another video that, like, I had a whole bunch of trolls. Like, oh my gosh, Juan is such a shill and he's defending Sony. It's like he's telling people that there are alternatives to Samsung and Apple. And that makes him a shill. So that was another fun one, watching people flip out on Reddit. Because I wasn't just towing the line of Sony equals bad, because one time I got a thermal warning and other phones probably wouldn't have, but I wasn't testing phones directly. And when I record on other phones, I don't get thermal warnings, and Sony gave me a thermal warning, so it's thermals. And again, that's totally fair. If that kind of thing concerns you and you're that bad at tech and like comparative analysis, then fine, you know, stick with what you're familiar with. But I feel there are a number of people who intentionally shop Sony's for the features that Sony's provide. And I think they would be sort of fine with what I'm demonstrating in that video if they understand what's going on. Again, as people who make videos about technology on the internet, it's not just sharing our opinions. I think sometimes we can also educate our audiences. And if you're not doing a good job of educating your audience, then you're kind of just a marketing arm for whatever's popular. That's just really like the only takeaway I can kind of say. McCorkran, was this the Android subreddit or the Xperia subreddit? Both, actually. I had one little troll that was just like following me around Reddit. Oh no, but you said this, and that's not true, and you're just making excuses. And you're like, well, you didn't watch the video because I showed my work in the video. It's pretty great. Japico. It's kind of funny how ultra means beyond. Oh well, who am I kidding? Words have no meaning anymore, exactly like sim trays. I don't know. It's like we've exhausted the word pro, right? The word pro doesn't really mean a whole lot anymore. So now it's like we've got to exhaust the word ultra. I just think it's funny. Like, we get so hung up on the marketing. Oh my gosh, they called this phone this name, so that's the Pixel 5, I think, was a great example. It, you know, the Pixel 4 was a flagship, and the Pixel 5 is a mid-ranger. Okay? And they were priced appropriately. So you compare against similar configurations and prices, and how does it perform? But it's not a flagship, it's not a real flagship. Sure, that's the name, you're right. So then you use the product and you compare it against something in that range. But it's not as good. Yes. But how does it realistically stack up? So yeah, it's pretty rough. Simon says Hypno. What comes after Ultra? Actually, that's a fun one. Leave me a comment here. Leave me a chat. What are we gonna do? Because we've done Plus, we've done Pro, we've done Ultra. Apple has the Max for the larger size, but that's not really a commentary on necessarily the quality of the product. What do we do after Ultra? TK Bay Infinite. J-Man, we've done Pro Plus. There have been Pro Pluses. What was the Vivo X70? Vivo X70 Pro Control Alt Clay, the iPhone 15. Fantastic. I like fantabulous. All right, well, everything that we... Oh, I have one more bit of housekeeping. This one was just kind of silly. The folks at Pissed Consumer, they're this cute little YouTube channel that they're trying to build like... they're trying to build like a consumer megaphone. So when people have problems with products, they have a website and forums and conversations about, you know, buyer beware, stuff like that. They're trying to make a sort of separate adjunct. They hit me up. They wanted to talk about the iPhone 14 launch, and it really did just kind of come down to some ideas and predictions on what we might see for the iPhone 14. This was like literally days before the big Apple announcement. And so I guessed it on their show. It's about a 25-minute video of me just rambling on about psychology and marketing and the bullying that Apple profits from. So that's going to wrap us up for housekeeping. I like Twin Folk Tech, the Ultra Max Ultimate Supreme Edition. Ooh, Muppin-ish. Quantum. Because that's like an almost completely meaningless phrase for consumers, but it sounds really cool. Oh, that's good. iPhone 15 Quantum. Yeah, that could actually be a phone designator. It's emotionally satisfying and it means nothing. All right, all of the links, everything, all of the articles we're going to be talking about, all of the housekeeping, all of our show notes available on somegadgetguide.com. And I've been getting back more into writing. So some of these editorials and a few of the reviews that I've got coming out, I'm going to be pushing more towards written. On the Patreon, I did publish a write-up on the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. It's only a text piece. I'm probably not going to shoot a video. If you're on patreon.com/somegadgetguy, you'll be able to catch that there. But we want to get through some housekeeping. The news block is pretty heavy, so we should definitely get through that. Do want to highlight Twin Folk Tech, if only companies were this honest. Twin Folk says, Dynamic Cash Grab Edition. So dynamic, some kind of dynamo. That could be a good emotional phrase to tack onto the end of a phone. So you could have like the Moto Edge Dynamo. You know, that could work. That could work. I like it. Barry Johnson, not only do I think Juan and everyone in the chat should upgrade to the iPhone 14, I believe that we should all get two. He meant T-W-O, but he accidentally wrote T-O-O. And so everyone should have a chuckle at Barry's expense. All right, getting into the news. We've got, I've actually got a trio of stories from Ars Technica. Again, I've just been a sucker for the way that they've been commenting on tech and politics. John Brodkin over at Ars, we've got something we should keep an eye on because I think this is going to get real ugly over the next 10 years. FCC to fight space debris by requiring satellite disposal in 5 years or less. Planned rule for low Earth satellites requires deorbit 5 years after end of life. Now, this seems pretty common sense to me. A proposal released yesterday by the FCC chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel would adopt a first ever rule requiring non-geostationary satellite operators to deorbit their satellites after the end of their operations to minimize the risk of collisions that would create debris. Scheduled for an FCC vote on September 29th. The 5-year rule would be legally binding, unlike the current 25-year standard that's based on a NASA recommendation proposed in the 1990s. So as we're seeing, like, Starlink sending dozens and dozens and dozens of satellites into constellations in low Earth orbit, where we've seen, I mean, I think it was a little over a year ago where we talked about a Starlink SpaceX launch, where basically all of those satellites just fell out of the sky. So we know when we're in LEO, when we're in low Earth orbit, these things probably don't have the highest longevity, but as we clutter more of that sky with this kind of communications gear, it's increasingly likely that we're going to have collisions, and that debris just kind of fogs. So it makes it even more dangerous to send stuff up. It makes, you know, manned missions even more dangerous. All of these things get more complicated as we track all of this junk. And to have like a 25-year standard is absolutely silly. So I don't see any major issues with this proposal. Of course, it's going to end up becoming some kind of political, oh, you're trying to get business to do things. Because I'm so tired. And I don't know, some please, in the, yeah, Dave Burns, think of the shareholders. Please, in the chat right now, companies get to make things and profit from it, but then they're never responsible for the end of life, the cleanup. It's like this huge, magnanimous gesture if they even offer some kind of recycling program. So now, like, the ability to get on and off our planet is covered with all of this junk in orbit. And none of the companies that have sent that stuff up are in any way sort of responsible for what happens with that gear once it's up in space. To me, it just seems like if you can't create a successful business where you also consider the end of life for a product or for some type of some piece of equipment, then you have no business being in business. Your business has failed. And if we're a free market economy, then the free market needs to let that business fail. If you can't handle the end of that equipment life cycle and you just leave it up to taxpayers, then we should be allowed to own your company. It should become a public company. If we have to foot the bill for cleaning up after your mess, then you don't get to profit from it. And we'll put that money, like, back into social services and stuff, you know? So Phoenix, yes, sounds like the oil industry cleanup, question mark. There's no profit in that. The taxpayer can take care of it. So yeah, I kind of feel like, hey, we might actually have just the inkling. We got to keep an eye on it. September 29 is when the FCC throws it up on a vote. And something tells me it's going to land totally on partisan voting lines at the FCC. So we should keep, just again, I'm putting this up here as a story very frequently, something we need to keep an eye on. So Simon says, Hypno, bring out the quantum space dumpster. I've seen so many proposals to, like, what if we had these other little robots up in Earth orbit that could help, like, clean up other pieces of junk? And then people rightly point out, yeah, so you got this robot up in orbit and it's cleaning up junk. And then you need to get rid of that junk. And then doesn't the robot that you've sent up, doesn't that also become junk? It's such a mess up there. Oh, it makes me so sad. All right, I'm going to take a quick drink of water here before we move on to our next story. Because again, it's another Ars Technica banger. From Magus, we need a fleet of flying helicarrier side waste management trash compactors to clear up the skies. And then, what do you do with the helicarriers? Then you have helicarrier-sized waste. All right, just another ongoing ridiculousness that is, the ongoing dispute between Elon Musk and Twitter. Another one written up by John Brodkin. I'm just fanboying all over John Brodkin this week. Judge slams Musk for withholding text messages, cites glaring omissions. Judge also chides Musk for wasting time, saying, there's no time for just kiddings. So I want to scroll down to a part of this. Let me see if I can find it. So this is the ongoing dispute between Musk and, I read this on my phone and now I totally can't see where this is, but basically the lawyers for both sides are asking for ridiculous things, then saying no, then not really delivering their info. So here, one of the things that they're tagging Musk on, Musk wants all of this transparency, wants all of this data from Twitter, but then when his text messages are requested, plaintiff's fourth discovery motion identifies clear deficiencies in defendant's document production. As just one example, defendants produced two texts sent to Musk from Robert Steele of Perellia Weinberg Partners on June 17th. At 9:57 a.m., 10:15 a.m., the 9:57 a.m. text asks a question. The 10:15 a.m. text stating, okay, got it, implies that Musk responded. Assuming that Musk's response was not telepathic, one would expect some evidence of it in defendant's document production. So Musk isn't really producing the data that's being requested. So we've got texts from his lawyers and then all of these gaps in what Musk is replying. So again, because Musk is just so concerned about the transparency on Twitter's side of this Twitter deal, you would think he'd probably kind of button all that stuff up so that it would be more accessible. I mean, these are legal proceedings. The other one, it's just kind of funny, is Musk's legal team is asking for certain pieces of data, then changing what they're asking for, then changing back. And this is basically what it reads like is a legal exercise meant to exhaust the capabilities of your opponent, not necessarily good faith legal proceedings. Defendants gave plaintiff the impression that they were seeking limited Slack custodians, only to then say that they never meant it. In this highly expedited case, there is no time for just kiddings. Parties must be able to rely upon one another's good faith proposals for the discovery process to function, Judge McCormick wrote. Who here in the chat, when billionaires are involved, who here really feels that the lawyers representing an eccentric billionaire really had good faith legal proceedings on the brain? Anyone? Did anyone feel like that was the point? the shenanigans that Musk is going through right now to renege on a deal that he put out public, didn't do his own due diligence on, his stock plummeted, he didn't really have the money to buy what he said he could buy, now he's trying to flip-flop out of it. Anyone think that any of this is good faith? Any of this is in earnest for really the legal, you know, sort of groundwork, the framework, the honesty that we're really going about this the best way? Anyone? I feel like it's probably safe to say a lot of this is just shenanigan. Yeah? Yeah. Dave Burns, he had the money, he just didn't want to pay taxes on it. See, but also, like, what sucks is, like, he's at a tier where he can make these kinds of moves. He can tank stocks. He can, even his own stocks. And it still kind of financially benefits him, because then he is on the hook for less taxes, even though he's basically not paying taxes on stuff. This is so far beyond. Simon says, Hypno, I was about to tag this. Musk is Tony Stank. Yeah, kind of. It's like, hey, we have Tony Stark at home. And then you get home and that's the Tony Stark you have at home. This is just, again, further legal theater. None of this seems in earnest. None of this seems like good faith negotiations. Now it's just posturing and chest puffery. And how can we find loopholes in the legal system to prolong and exhaust and spend way more money to cripple our opponent? And it's just real silly, and it's sad. At the end of all this, we still don't know what's going to happen. I feel like if you're a user of Twitter, now would be a really good time to start looking at your social media strategy, looking at ways that you can sort of divest yourself. Like, Twitter for me is almost now become just a dumping ground. A new video has come out, so I'm telling you about the new video. If you hit me up on Twitter, I'll try and reply in my messages and stuff, but it's not something that I sit there and scroll through. Twitter is dying for me like Instagram and Facebook died for me. I get so little value out of it, and it's just the sort of remaining threads, the momentum of relationships that I have on Twitter, friendships that I have on Twitter. That's about it. And with all of this shenanigan happening between Musk and Twitter, it doesn't engender any more goodwill for me. It doesn't, oh, you know, what I think I'm going to do is use Twitter more if Elon Musk buys it. No. Quite the opposite. Gormlord, rich people are cool. Yeah, Dave Burns, I completely agree. This dude trashed his image way more than just not being publicly awful. Again, all he had to do was just be the cool, eccentric inventor guy. I felt really bad. I didn't mean to kind of dissuade the AC tech that we had out to repair our air conditioner. We were just off on random tangents talking about stuff. And I used to work a lot on cars, so some of the motor failure that our AC unit had, I kind of understood. And I don't remember how we got on the tangent, but he was like, yeah, and you know, what's going on with Elon Musk? And you're like, well, he kind of brought it on himself. It's like, yeah, but he's like one of the smartest guys running businesses right now. And you're like, yeah, but he's really good at being the smart guy at a business. He's not really much of an inventor. And he was like, yeah, but like PayPal and Tesla. And you're like, he didn't really invent those. He didn't really create them. He sort of stepped in and then kind of built financial systems around it. So there's I'm not taking away the fact that he's a genius. I'm not taking the fact that he's a very capable and intelligent individual. What I'm saying is he's not Tony Stark, as we've been joking here in the comments. Yeah, Dave Burns, he could have just been the space car guy. Kenox, yeah, he's trying to. Kenox says, can't he just get another government subsidy to pay off Twitter? Maybe he can turn it into a government PR platform. What was it? Starlink is looking at yet another round of government funding. I want to say it was Starlink or SpaceX. I can't remember now specifically what. But again, it's like his entire business model is step into something that's already been created, disrupt what's already there, but not necessarily for the better. It's not like more competition. It's more like, let me lobby local government to prevent competition and then rely on tax dollars to fund all of his initiatives. And that's what's so galling. Again, like Tesla and battery capacity and manufacturing wouldn't exist without millions of California tax dollars. And as soon as rightfully, he paid it back. It's not like he's still sitting on loans to California. But then he was like, oh, but the taxes in California are too ridiculous. And it was like, your company wouldn't exist without my tax dollars. Technically, I owned a small piece of Tesla before he paid them back. Japico. But Joe Rogan said that Musk is the only man who can save us all. Well, there's no arguing with that kind of commentary, is there? So, moving right along, again, we just got to keep an eye on it because we have no idea what's going to happen with Twitter, and it's frustrating because we have to keep an eye on it, and I'd rather not. I'd rather ignore that these people are fighting like children and using up our resources and squabbling in a court of law.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Moving right along, this is a little concerning because I am planning a PC replacement, if not at the end of this year, maybe early next year. My little Threadripper workstation, I say little, it's like, it's actually, I think, almost as heavy as I am. And I'm a little chunky these days. My Threadripper 2080 Ti, still doing well. I mean, I overbuilt that system. It's not really in bad shape. But what I actually do want to look at building is something just a little more power efficient for better performance for the kind of stuff that I do. So I might end up just going pre-built rather than sourcing every single individual piece for my next workstation. I need to figure out, because I haven't kept up with the pre-built market nearly as well after leaving Newegg. But this massive tower, I've got like a almost server tower under my desk right now, and it's on a ridiculous power supply, and the Threadripper is super thirsty. I think it's time for me to shake things up. So I was really looking at this next generation of CPUs and GPUs. I'm probably going to do an AMD NVIDIA combined build. And I'm not even looking at going like extreme. Like I think I might end up just taking a step down. I have the 2080 Ti. I was looking something more like RTX 4070. Like that might be my jam. And I think I'll, for the video work that I do, I'll probably end up with a better performance per watt if I do something like that. So, a little concerning when we see some of the rumors and leaks on price listings. So this is just the RTX 4090. This is from Tom's Hardware, written up by Aaron Klotz. NVIDIA GeForce RTX 4090 shows up in early retail listings. The new big dog GPU from NVIDIA. And if we scroll down, we're talking roughly $3,000 US if we compare the Australian pricing and do the exchange. If you're in Australia and you're shopping at Perth Computers and Office Supplies, it looks like the RTX 4090 could cost you $4,550 Australian. And if we do the conversion, that's just over $3,000 US. So I will not be buying a 4090, even if it's like 30% cheaper. So let's say that GPU comes out at $2,000. That's not going to be the GPU for my needs. Because also, it's like, I'm not cutting 8K video. I'm not doing any like heavy compositing. I'm not even doing like motion tracking. I do want to play. There was an update to DaVinci Resolve, and it's supposed to do a better job of like mapping. So like you can kind of say, hey, this is my subject, kind of map it and then track it through this shot. And it's supposed to do a better job. So if I want to line up text, I'm holding a phone and it's going to link up to the phone and the text kind of floats around. But that kind of stuff takes up so much more time than just putting out a static piece of text. And honestly, I don't have the time to sit there and motion track words on a screen. Like, again, I'm not shooting cinematic. I'm trying to create commentary, not advertising. So, I'll be looking at what I can do for pricing and maybe trying to come up with a system build. But once the new AMD CPUs are out, and once hopefully these RTX 4000 series GPUs are out, I think for roughly $5,000, I can build a system that will definitely outperform my Threadripper and 2080. And not only outperform it, but outperform it and use less power. So that's my goal. That's the big target, is I want a workstation performance per watt. I'm actually a little less concerned about high-end gaming. I really don't play games in my office or in my workspace. Increasingly, I'm playing games on phones and Steam Decks. So, you know, the image fidelity I'm a little less concerned about. And it's okay if I'm not at the bleeding edge of tech. So we'll have to see. I think it'll be a fun challenge. I really am planning kind of early next year. Maybe that's when it's going to be best to start putting those pieces together, or even just to start reaching out to some of the companies that do pre-built systems and say, like, what's current? What are the reviews looking like? What can we put together that really makes sense for this kind of content? Okay, so that was NVIDIA. Oh, we've got one last story in the news block, and we can wrap up the news block. So, this one hits really close to home, and I found myself getting strangely emotional about this kind of story. We recently saw that there's going to be a change in pricing for Filmic. Filmic is a very popular app, a camera app. It gives you more manual controls. Excuse me, I've got like a coffee burp coming up. Hold on. Oh, that one was gross. Sorry. I muted the mic in time, hopefully, because it even made me a little... Whoa, that was a terrible sound. this is the best podcast ever. So Filmic, great little camera app. I've used it on things. What I like using Filmic for is actually... I've been playing with a few anamorphic lenses, and mostly that content just ends up getting used in like family videos. I haven't shot a lot just for any of my public video, but it does like the squeeze and de-squeeze. So when you use an anamorphic lens, it kind of squishes your frame optically, and then you're supposed to, in editing, stretch it back out so you have a wider field of view. Filmic has been great for that kind of stuff, but their new model... It looks like it could be charged weekly or monthly, and it will be significantly more expensive to keep up a running subscription on Filmic. Late last week, actually, technically, this all started filtering the week before, but I caught it late last week. It seems one of my favorite video editing apps is also looking at a significantly more expensive subscription model. So, Kinemaster is, I want to say it's rough. I mean, again, you can kind of shop it on sales too, but it's roughly $20, $25, $30 a year, somewhere in that ballpark. I actually don't keep a running Kinemaster subscription anymore. So the current plan is to change it to $10 a month. So from $30 a year to $100, $120 a year made me really, really upset. So this is actually, what I'm showing on screen is the Kinemaster subreddit on Reddit. The annual cost of Kinemaster is skyrocketing in September. Please double check your subscription renewal to avoid surprises. And the reply from Kinemaster, like they actually have a Reddit account, thank you for your feedback on pricing for Kinemaster Premium. Kinemaster is dedicated to providing the best creative editing environment possible for its users. As the app evolves and adds new valuable features such as new tools, more video templates and assets, so does the app's offering to its users. Thank you for being part of the Kinemaster family. Your subscription helps make Kinemaster popular. So I just want to pick apart that one sentence. As the app evolves and adds new valuable features, such as new tools, more video templates, and assets, so does the app's offering to its users. So as the app adds more things for its users, the app adds more things for its users. That sentence really doesn't make sense, and it makes me very cranky because we're talking about the price. But they're saying, yeah, we're adding new features, which means we're adding new features. But that doesn't justify, what, like a 400% price increase yearly? And I'm just getting real tired of, like, never owning a piece of software. Honestly, most of the work I do, I would be fine with PowerDirector from 4 years ago. PowerDirector 4 years ago could edit and render 4K 60 frame per second video. Excuse me. Like, I'd be good. I don't need a lot of these fancy new stickers and animated GIFs and text tools. I was good. If I could go back and still use that older version of PowerDirector, I'd still be just as capable in getting my work done when I'm out on the go. I used nothing of any benefit from the newer builds of PowerDirector when I cut that Yuffie video. Like, all of that was stuff I could have done years ago from the same app. So this notion that, like, we've got to keep paying, we've got to keep buying, what I'd love is, like, just generations. So you come up with PowerDirector 6, you come up with Kinemaster 5, you say, hey, this year, or put them on a yearly, make it a year thing. Kinemaster 2022. You're going to pay $20 for Kinemaster 2022. You're going to get updates through 2022. And then after a point, they say, hey, for Kinemaster 2023, we're going to be doing these things. But I still have Kinemaster 2022 and I can still install that app and I can run it until there's finally, like, no more support for it. Like when Android as an operating system completely eclipses, and maybe they change something like how, like, scope storage, how that phone handles storage. And then the app kind of dies naturally and Kinemaster can pull it. And then from there, my recourse is to then buy Kinemaster 2025. And then I'm on that train and I just own that for 2 or 3 years. That to me would be way more beneficial to consumers. But instead, what we're doing is we're turning everything into these subscription models and it's awful. And, you know, what makes me really frustrated is we see PowerDirector doing it. We see Kinemaster doing it. I believe VN. VN was another one of my sort of popular options. Hey, if you want to cut video on the go, there was this one little fee just to remove ads. And that was it. And you had, like, the basics. And now I think even VN is on a more yearly. Like, I think it's $70 a year for VN video editor. Like, I bought DaVinci Resolve once. And I know DaVinci has a completely different business model for professionals, and the software is just sort of like a loss leader for getting people invested in hardware and then using DaVinci in more professional applications. But you can also get DaVinci Resolve for free to get up and running on really good desktop grade video editing. Like, what I wouldn't give for a stripped, pared down, multi-track version of DaVinci Resolve for my phone. Again, if they've already compiled DaVinci Resolve to run on ARM for Mac OS, man, it'd be real nice if I could get that and then run it, like, in a desktop mode on Samsung DeX or on Moto Ready 4. Boy, would that be huge.
And they'll never do it because Android. But I really want those kinds of capabilities on the go. And it seems like instead of our increasingly more powerful pocket computers getting better software, it seems like we're smushing the same software into substantially more expensive subscription plans, and that's eroding the benefit of having a nice premium tier phone. So why would I play with all this? Why I should just go and buy a Pixel, which is a Pixel 6a, $450 phone, does phone things pretty well. It's really, really powerful. It's got a good camera. Why bother? Why bother trying to replace a laptop and a camera with a really high-end kind of phone if, like, the apps are now waging direct economic warfare on my wallet? It's absolutely stunning just how completely off the mark. The creator community is already so small that now this kind of a move where prices are getting jacked up and are crazy and unreasonable. And that is an unreasonable price for a mobile video editing app. I'm not usually the one to say, like, oh, well, money's and worth it. Going to $10 a month, that is not reasonable. That is awful. That is a bad way to offer a mobile product for your consumers based on what it can really do. Because there's so very little of KineMaster that is server side. Like, they've got some sharing tools and some upload and some storage tools, but it's not like they're offloading the work on my phone. My phone, my electricity, my battery, my CPU, GPU are going into the content creation. Their software is organizing how that content creation happens. But it's not like they're sending my project up to a server to render it super fast and then add a whole bunch of stuff to it and bring it back down for processing. Like, if it were doing that, I could say, like, oh, well, that could be a tier worth paying for. That's not what they're doing. I'm still footing the costs for a powerful device. Super, super frustrating. Dave Burns, see also Adobe Creative Suite. Yeah. And CopaCash, why isn't KineMaster a one-time payment? Because you'll make more money on a subscription. And if you're delivering new features and plugins and effects and stuff, like, yeah, I understand there should be some monetization for updates to a piece of software after the fact. But that's why I want a generation model. It's where I want KineMaster 2022 to be a one-time payment. And then I know I'm not going to get anything from KineMaster 2023. I'm not going to get updates and improvements past that window. But I still have an app that I can install and that functions and does what I needed it to do from that generation of software. That's what I want. But I don't think we're ever really going to get something like that. Do, do, do. Yeah, so this is what scummy Zippo apps did with iSyncer. Once a $9.99 flat fee turned into a $29.99 monthly fee for reduced function. I mean, we saw the same thing too, like IFTTT, built on this cool factor, and then they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to get rid of all of your formulas and recipes and stuff, and now it's a subscription model. So I get it, but this is what's frustrating is, like, there aren't really many alternatives in this space. And I'm really worried that because KineMaster and PowerDirector are now subscription apps, that LumaFusion, if LumaFusion ever eventually decides to make itself available on any Android device, that they're going to shift over and they're going to say, hey, you can be a one-time purchase on iPhones, but then you're going to be a yearly charge on Androids. And again, it's like we keep getting screwed. we keep getting ratcheted for app developers looking at how to extract more value. It's really, really frustrating. So that wraps up our news block. Just a quick shout out, quick plug for the subreddit. There's Firefox. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is my safe haven where I find fun stories from new content creators that I wasn't subscribed to before. Engagement has been kind of reducing, so we still need help promoting and sharing and getting people invested in helping out the mission of reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. But I took the top spot this last week with my phone thermal test. Did the Xperia 5 Mark IV fail in a video recording comparison? TK Bay took the second spot. Apple iPhone 14 Pro, no more SIM card, what that means to you and to Android users. TK and I took number three for best of our week. And then we've got a case review for the Surface Duo. We've got a case review for the Pixel 6a. We've got LaShawn checking out the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro. And then also just a news piece, kind of wrapping out sort of the rest of the top story options here. Android 12L now available for the Z Fold 3 on AT&T. So we had a really healthy week over the last week, just a variety of topics, manufacturers. It wasn't just like, oh, Apple everything. A bunch of people put out a bunch of content, and the YouTube algorithm sat on most of it because iPhone. But if you dug just a little bit deeper and you found a community that was looking to highlight and celebrate a broader conversation, you found way more better videos and conversations. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Definitely check it out. It's my labor of love. It needs help because right now we're not seeing as much growth. We're not seeing as much engagement. We're not seeing as many views. But all of the people that are sharing here are putting out phenomenal content that deserves more attention. And that's the mission of the subreddit. Twinfolk, I just posted a new video on glowing rectangles. And Twinfolk, if you're benefiting from the experience of contributing to glowing rectangles, maybe also share your post through the subreddit. And then you'll get more upvotes. And then maybe your next video will be one of the top of the week. And then everybody wins as algorithms look at the popularity of your content and it grows from there. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Japico, way more better is that's going to be the new ultra. And Dave Burns, I feel like YouTube is a platform designed for growing and then killing hobbies. Well, I think over the life of YouTube, we've definitely seen a trend of hey, this is exciting and disruptive, and now that it's reached this kind of critical mass, now we can kind of kill what made it interesting in the first place. So, moving right along, we do have a couple stories here, new stories here for the gadget block. Nothing too crazy, but just for us to kind of keep an eye on. It always kind of blows my mind when manufacturers put out minimum specs for pieces of software. And then you look at the minimum specs and you say, like, yeah, I could understand how that software would work on those specs, but I would have to assume that that would be an absolutely miserable experience. And Android is bumping up their minimum specs. Ron Amadeo at Ars Technica, Android 13 raises minimum system requirements to 2 gigabytes of RAM and 16 gig of storage. So up until 2022, on Android 12, the minimum specs for an Android phone running Android 12, 1 gigabyte of RAM. Oh, man. You want to say, like, yeah, I could see where that could work. I think it could function as a bootable experience. But if you were ever running Android 12 on 1 gigabyte of RAM, I think we would all agree that would be terrible. That would be a practically non-functional device. And Android 13 bumping it up to 2 gigabytes of RAM doesn't feel like it would be much better. Excuse me. But if you're running an older, cheaper phone from like 2021, and you were at those bare minimum system specs, or 2022 also, we should very confidently assume you will not be getting Android 13, even if you were in line for like an operating system update. That's not really a thing. Can anyone in the chat, have you seen a review or a video or even a posting on any Android devices with less than 4 gigabytes of RAM? Again, I'm going to sound super elitist here, but even on my least expensive, the Infinix, Pocos, Redmi's, I can't think of anything that's had less than 4 gigabytes of RAM. And most of them in the 6 to 8 gig range, even though we're talking about sub $300 devices. Like some of those Redmi's, I think, had 6 gigs of RAM and would retail for the equivalent of around $250 US. So I know there are people around the world where $250 US is way too much to spend on a phone. And I totally get it. But I also feel like this buffer of saying like 2 gigs of RAM for Android 13 should be pretty easy to beat even in the $150 territory. Like even at $150, getting us up to like 4 gigs of RAM should be doable. And at 4 gigs of RAM, I think we've got a reasonable phone experience for people just looking to cover some communication basics. But has anyone? I have not even heard of a phone launching. Is maybe like an HMD? Is there a really, really super cheap Nokia that has like 2 gigs of RAM? Because it has not passed my sphere of influence. I literally have not seen any devices sold to consumers with that little RAM. Hold on, let me go back up here through the comments. Let's see. Simon says, Hypno, I just bought my old fella a Redmi Note 10 Pro. He's gone from 3 to 6 gigabytes of RAM. Dave Burns. Yeah, in that space, KaiOS. You would be looking at KaiOS, some offshoot of Firefox OS, some kind of Linux build. What was that TCL Flip? That flip phone had, I think, had KaiOS on it. So yeah, you would be in 2 gigs of RAM for something like that. That makes perfect sense, but you're not running a full build, a full heavy build of Android. Simon says, Hypno, the Redmi Note 9 was 3 gigabytes, but what is it? The last one I played with was the Note 11S, and I want to say it had 4 or 6. I can't remember. Dr. Claw saying, old Pixels had more than that. I can't remember any Pixel that had less than 4 gigabytes of RAM, so I think you're right. McCorkran, the TCL Stylus has 4 gigs of RAM. So there's like the TCL Stylus, the TCL 30s, they had Snapdragon 400s, and I'm pretty sure they also had 4 gigs of RAM. Oh, Twin Folk, I'm pretty sure Kevin Breeze's channel covers super budget devices like buy off the shelf at Walmart for $30 kind of budget. Okay. So, you know what? Next time I go to a Target, I'm going to walk around some of their phone selection. Because again, you're totally right. You go in there for a low-cost MVNO, low-cost carrier, and, you know, pay as you go, where they're still charging you per minute and per megabyte of data. And like your bill is going to be $20 a month and you can buy this phone in a cardboard box right off the shelf. I bet you I still can find a dusty box with an old phone in it with like a Snapdragon 460 and 2 gigabytes of RAM. I bet you I can still find something like that. I you're absolutely correct there. Oh, McCorkran, thank you. Okay, so this counts as recent. The A10e from Samsung had 2 gigabytes of RAM, and that was launched in 2020. That to me, okay, so now we've at least got a major manufacturer putting out an ultra low cost device, and that's, I'm shocked, but I'm not really, but that's the kind of tier we're talking about. Man, it is crazy to me how disposable our phones have become. And I mean, just think about like years ago when I was a kid building my own first personal PC, and I didn't even have, I had an 800 megahertz system was my first computer. And the idea that I would have a pocket computer with gigabytes of RAM and hundreds of gigabytes of storage would have just exploded my skull. And now it's like, well, 2 gigabytes of RAM is non-functional. And, you know, we could spend some time optimizing software and performance for lower cost devices and still have plenty of headroom. In fact, if we could optimize Android to run like Buddha on a gig of RAM, like just the Android, the kernel, the operating system, just the core Android experience, if we could polish that up a little bit more, that would be a huge benefit to everyone with more powerful devices. But it does seem to be the kind of, again, the ratchet on keeping people paying for more expensive stuff than they probably really need. Kappa Cash, no Android should have 2 gigabytes of RAM. Correct. Yeah, oh, and TwinFolk, absolutely. And sometimes your dApps that run Android might have specs lower than that. I want to say, one of the last ones I checked out, I think, was the Fio. Fio has, I think, an Android-powered dApp. But I want to say it's running, like, a Snapdragon 600. Like, it's actually not terrible in terms of, like, system specs. Not like my old, like, I've got an old Fio over there, which is miserable to try and swipe through the UI. I think the newer ones are actually reasonably powerful. So that, I mean, again, it's progress. But again, you could also then, for less money, just get an old LG and get pretty close to the Sonic quality with a much more performant device. Just another little heads up here. Again, the way that these products get launched, unless you are really good at taking advantage of trade-in offers and you don't care about long-term support, because it's, again, I feel like that's a silly juxtaposition to be, you know, like promoting, oh, this gets like years of updates, but I'm going to flip it yearly. So the years of updates don't really matter if that's how you shop your devices. We all know that this stuff is kind of overvalued for the MSRP and then drops in price once it kind of reaches that market penetration of diehard first adopters. So if you're on the Samsung train or if you're on the Apple train, you know that you've got to play a game. Like, MSRP isn't necessarily the value, it's the perception. So on that note, the Galaxy Z Fold 4 is already $200 off on Amazon. So again, this is like full price, no trade-ins. If you want a Z Fold 4, you can pick one up for $1,600. So that's not very long. That happened really quick. I'll be very surprised if in another couple months that the easily found price on a Z Fold 4 is starting to hover closer to like $999. It always seems to be the way. Like, Z Fold 2 really kind of cemented this. Whoa, it's like a $2,000 foldable. Now it's on sale. And now it's on a bigger sale. Now it's half price. And that whole decrescendo happens way faster than you would think for a product that's supposed to be such a crown jewel. So, like, Samsung is actively kind of wrecking the perceived value of their own devices. I just kind of want to look it up here, actually, now that I'm saying that. So let's go to Swappa. Let's look up Z Fold 4. Z Fold 4. And let's see. I'm gonna stick to unlocked. This podcast not brought to you by Swappa, by the way. Here, let me screen share. Oh, whoops, my screen share is way off. No one told me that my window looked funky. There we go. Okay, a brand new 512 gig Z Fold 4 from a seller with a pretty decent reputation, the MNE Group LLC, selling for $1,320. So that's already $270 cheaper than the Z Fold on sale for $200 on Amazon. So if you want a Z Fold 4, And you don't have like a trade in, or you don't want to like send a device in. Like, again, this is what drives me crazy. I had this really lovely conversation with one of the moms of one of Lex's friends. Total iPhone family. It wasn't an iPhone versus Android kind of conversation, but it really perfectly summed up the reality of a family of gadgets versus an individual who likes to buy themselves nice toys. So she's got three kids, her husband. They're constantly cycling devices. So she was just rocking a brand new iPhone 13 Pro. And she got it because it's like, well, we've got all these lines on our carrier, and then we had to add a line, so then we got this deal. So I got a new phone, and my old phone went to my son. And that meant, like, we didn't get the best deal. And I was like, well, wait a minute. But wait a minute. You got the iPhone 13 Pro for less than MSRP. And she was like, yeah, we paid less. There was like a deal on this, and then we got a line, and now I'm paying X number of dollars a month. It's not like they paid for it up front. And you still have another phone that was in great shape, perfectly functional, and that went to your oldest son. Yeah. So where was the value in doing a trade-in? Because you still would have had to have bought him a phone. You would have saved money on this, but there's no way that you would have bought a whole other phone for the kind of trade-in on your, I forget what iPhone it was, but it was an older iPhone. She had had it for like 2 or 3 years. That whole cycle of kind of gifting devices actually sort of represents a better value for time. Keeps the device out of landfills longer. A modest repair and refresh, like just getting it a battery swap, is going to bring it up to brand new capabilities again. It's going to be a speed demon, and a battery replacement is not prohibitively expensive. It's way cheaper than buying a whole new phone. And your trade-in deals are good, but if you have to manage more than just yourself, you're going to get kind of wrecked. So if you've got like a 4 or 5 year old phone, but it still has some life left in it, why trade it into Samsung and get like $50 off your Z Fold 4 when you can go to Swappa and get a brand new, it's listed as new. They're listing it as a new product, not mint condition, not like new, not in good condition, new, $1,320. That is ballpark what I paid for my Xiaomi 12S Ultra. You want all the fancy screen folding technologies, those new cameras, you want DeX, you want the new bottom software dock and bar. A couple weeks. That's all you had to wait. If you just didn't buy it at launch pre-order, you saved yourself $480 off the base model price. And this is the 512 gig version, not the 256, the 512. The 512 version, that's nuts. So again, I think our entire perception of this is completely upside down because of the way that influencers talk about phones on YouTube. Like, this is a screaming good deal. It's funny because I don't like the Fold, but I think I've sold 3 people on Folds, like 2 of them like on my Discord. Like, hey, well, what do you think about this? You're like, actually, I think the Fold would be a great fit for what you need to do. But publicly on my YouTube videos, I'm going to say I don't like the Fold because I don't. But it's funny. It's like, oh, you said the right words for me to recommend a Fold might be the right fit for you. But if you buy it brand new, you know you're paying Samsung a premium on this just for the first week of it existing. And that's what I think galls me. This is just a Samsung fan tax. And if you're a savvy shopper in the slightest, you wait 2 weeks. 2 weeks! And this is the kind of sale that you should be able to pick up on. Yeah, TK Bay is saying the 512 gig version is still $1,800 on Amazon. This is almost $400 off without having to do trade-in. And you get to keep all the gear that you've got. It makes me sad. It makes me sad because I feel like there was a time where I was a massive Samsung nerd and Samsung represented a better conversation about competing technologies, and I don't think they're putting their best foot forward. But I got to take a You know what? I'm not going to take another drink of coffee. I think it's actually kind of drying me out. I'm going to take a drink of water here, but I'm going to mute for just a sec.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey there, Juan, and hey there, you. This is Jason Howell from All About Android over at the twit.tv podcast network. Juan has been a guest on All About Android a number of times. In fact, we have awesome guests on the show each and every week. And we'd love for you to check out the show if you haven't already. Twit.tv/AAA is where you can go to find new episodes of All About Android. Each and every week, we talk about the top Android news, hardware, apps. We have a reviews portion called The Arena. It's very competitive, but in a fun way. We have a really great time doing this show, and we would love for you to join us sometime and check it out. We get journalists from throughout the Android world joining us. We even sometimes get Googlers who are actually making Android on the show to talk about what we love so much about the world of Android. That's twit.tv/AAA for new episodes of All About Android each and every Tuesday. All right, Juan, back to you.
Oh, man, there's some good ones. Like Gormlord, I haven't bought a new phone since the Note 8, and I upgrade yearly. It's not necessary anymore. I mean, again, it totally depends on your needs. I still feel like you can make some arguments depending on your work, which we're going to talk a little bit about when we get to Xperia and Unihertz and Poco here. But that is a super narrow slice of the population. Like, I'm talking maybe a couple thousand people on the planet are truly benefiting from a yearly, brand new, bleeding edge shopping experience. And beyond that, like, your recommendations have to be so much more balanced now. And tech YouTube is not capable of that kind of balance. You will not make as much money if you're really listening to consumers and looking at their behavior and trying to make better product recommendations rather than just reading off the marketing spec sheets and saying, oh, but it's better now. It's a better phone. You need the better phone. Twin folk, yeah, it's my pain too. If I didn't have a YouTube channel, I'd flip devices even less. I mean, genuinely. Let's be fair. Let's acknowledging who I am and my entire life of like owning ridiculous gadgets that I don't need. I'm always going to be that guy. Even if I'm not running a YouTube channel in 5 years, I'm still going to be that guy. I'm still going to have all these toys because I genuinely find entertainment in this kind of experience. Will I be running as aggressively as I am now? No. But when it comes to the practical experience of using a phone to get my daily stuff done, I'd probably still be on a V60 as my main phone, SIM card in the phone, stylus, cameras, everything would be fine. Now, I genuinely enjoy the experiences I've had with Vivos. The Vivos have been rocking my socks. The Pixel 6 still, more often than not, has my SIM card in it just because I kind of like the phone calling and messaging experience on the Pixel 6. The Axon has been a major surprise for me recently. I don't share photos of Lex Public, but we were walking around. It was after sunset. For some reason, I just grabbed the Axon 40 Ultra, and I was like, hey, I just want to take a couple photos. And I got this portrait of her just leaning up against a tree, and she's got just like the beginnings of a grin kind of creeping up on her face. It was about 10 minutes after sunset, and her back was to dusk, kind of fading, and it came out brilliant. All of a sudden, I just saw this young lady standing in front of me, and you're like, there is something special about the Axon 40 Ultra, and it's been getting regular software updates. It's been getting patches and bug fixes, like, this is a phone. I think the Axon 40 is probably going to take my win for sleeper of 2022. Because every time I pick it up, there's something that's just a little bit of a surprise. And it does something I wasn't expecting it to do, but in a good way. But then, I mean, also, I spent a little more of my gadget budget than I probably should have picking up the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. You want to talk about amazing camera performance? I mean, right up there with Vivo, and outperforming Vivo in a couple of ways that I think are very interesting. Sorry, that was a really long and rambling way to say, like, there are these really specific experiences that cater to very unique demographics that I think the color of that conversation is getting lost. If you pick up a phone and you use it to message people and take the occasional snapshot and watch videos, and that's your phone experience, or not, I'm not talking to people in this chat, because the people in this chat are beautiful, advanced people that understand nuance. But for your family and friends, increasingly, it's like we've got to get them off of spending $800 to $1,000. We've got to walk them back from that ledge. You pick up a Pixel 6a and it's overkill for a lot of people's needs. I mean, it really is. And that's a $450 phone. And they might not like it because it's overkill. They might not like it because it is too powerful for that long-lasting battery that people probably like better. And if we're not having these conversations with that kind of nuance, of course consumers are going to shrug and like, I don't know, I guess I'll just buy an iPhone. It just works. And you're like, yeah, but you've got to spend $800 for it to kind of basically just work. And that, I feel, is where we're really losing the hearts and minds. As techies, we're really not living up to this conversation. And we're letting the YouTube popularity run roughshod over consumers' actual wallets. You know, like, I look at what some of my family members spend on tech, and you're like, man, you did not need to do that, because you are never going to use those products anywhere near their capabilities. I'm sure it felt good to buy something really nice and expensive and to treat yourself, but, you know, in a couple of years, you're going to look back on that purchase and go like, yeah, it's got dust on it. I don't really use it anymore. It's just such a bummer. But this kind of leads me in, as Barry was saying, we should all just own iPhone 14s. Apparently, the iPhone 14 isn't performing as well in early pre-orders. It's coming by way of Mac Rumors' Hartley Charlton. The iPhone 14 and 14 Plus have seen bad pre-order results, indicating that Apple's positioning of the two new standard models may have failed, according to Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo. I'm going to say, go ahead and just read through this article. I'm not going to read through the whole write-up. And then there are links there. You definitely want to click on the link and not just the summation here in this article. From the iPhone 11 to the iPhone 13, that's where we saw Apple's greatest rise on the standard iPhone becoming one of the top, most popular, highest-selling phones in the world. You know, if we look at just individual models of phone, it's something like iPhone 13, iPhone 11, and then it might be one of the iPhone like 10Rs, I think, are often in like the top five most popular individual devices. So, the iPhone Pros are still selling really well. Like, the iPhone Pros are still matching the pre-orders from the iPhone 13 Pro. The iPhone 14 Pro is kind of in that same ballpark. But the main seller is getting consumers to spend at around that $800 mark, where Samsung has totally failed. Their sales are plummeting above $400. Apple sales were skyrocketing above $400. Right now, the core Android peak sales price tier is $300 to $500. That's our peak of the bell curve. For Apple, it's $800. So it's good for Apple financially. I'm talking about the business. It's good that the pros are still selling well, but Apple's average sales price is built on the base number. So the iPhone 11, not the Pro. The iPhone 12, not the Pro. The iPhone 13, not the Pro. That's their big seller. So if pre-orders are down there for the 14 and the 14 Plus, that's kind of dicey territory. That's showing us yet another data point that consumers are conserving more. They're not just throwing money. They're not trading in devices. They're supplying their families with their leftovers. They're kind of hunkering down. The economic situation right now is kind of making an $800 purchase a little less fun. And especially because, you know, like, I think consumers are starting to get a bit more wise to this. But wait a minute. I have an iPhone 11. I don't have the 5G, but I get great battery life. It performs well. And if I buy a new phone, that's going to be like $50 a month on my bill. But I already paid off this phone and it's doing everything that I need it to do. I think I'm good. I don't need an iPhone 14 if I'm on an iPhone 11. What is it going to do? And the iPhone 14 is exceedingly similar to the iPhone 13. So that also kind of cuts out people who were looking at the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 11 and looking at upgrading. You know, let me leapfrog two generations of phone. Oh, but now it's kind of the same as the last generation. So now I can leapfrog a third generation of phone, and that might make more sense. So that cycle, Apple consumers are starting to disrupt that cycle of every other year, maybe every 2 years. iPhones are now, I think, increasingly going to get pushed, especially as you start reducing the processing power of your base model and you stagger, the new chipset goes to the Pro. So now for the iPhone 15, it'll probably get the SoC from the iPhone 14 Pro. So now if I'm on an iPhone 11, I'll have an upgrade path for the iPhone 15. That's crazy. That's ridiculous, that kind of jump. So I'm not terribly surprised because of this strategy. At some point, Apple has to break their strategy, right? What they were doing with the base model and the Pro versions kind of seemed unsustainable. And now I think we're seeing that in play. We're actually starting to get some of the sales data to make that move. Okay, I'm way behind on the chat. So TwinFolk says, I've still never seen a foldable in the wild. The only person I've ever seen with a foldable IRL was me when I had a Z Fold 3. So I have seen a Z Fold 3 out in the wild. It was an old guy in a Corvette, had it on a belt holster. So I have seen one, not owned by any like tech reviewer. I have seen one Z Fold out in the wild. J-Man, Z Fold 4 is £1,769 for the 512 gig model on Amazon. Another listing is selling the same model for £1,459. I think that sounds like a pretty good deal, all things considered. Yeah, and seeing Gormlord, even if you upgrade every few years, you don't have to buy brand new. And I think with some of the changes that are coming to Android, you won't see the OTAs as long. But I'm telling people, the actual app and app store policies that update components of Android have gotten much better. So my concerns for someone owning like a 4-year-old Motorola, way, way lower, because we're seeing way more activity in Google Play to update parts of that phone, even if we don't get the big heavy-duty OTA. I don't see where those big monolithic updates for Samsung have really made Galaxy phones so much better polished than a Motorola or a Vivo or a ZTE. A lot of those issues seem to get changed, but the phone doesn't really seem to be so much better for having this big lump of software descend on your phone, whereas I've seen smaller but way more regular attention to my Moto. It's gotten way fewer OTAs, but individual components of that phone are constantly being tweaked, constantly being addressed, constantly being updated. And that, to me, is the better strategy. If there's an update to the camera, why should I have to wait for a big, heavy OTA to improve the camera if you can just send that package over Google Play and I see the camera app gets an update and boom, my camera gets better. You know, like that to me makes more sense. And it, to me, it's the failing of the iPhone and it's the failing of Galaxy phones that they're so reliant on all of this code getting a big lump sum update. So it's like you've got to reach this critical mass of all these other improvements before the OTA drops and you get all those updates. Oh, Barry. The Samsung A53 is the best mid-range phone right now. The spec sheet supports my statement. Twin Folk Tech. Hey, Juan, do you want to let me borrow that Xiaomi 12? So I actually wrote in my my write-up for the 12S Ultra, it has taken me so long to review it and to get the camera deep dive out because I've genuinely been using it too much on other videos and projects. Like, I'm constantly picking it up and using it to focus on another gadget. Like, that's the kind of tier. Like, between the X80 Pro and the 12S Ultra, there is almost no reason for me to take one of my Panasonics out into the field unless I need something hyper-specific from one of my, like, actual production cameras. Those two phones achieve nearly identical optical performance in most of the situations that I would want to use my camera on a tripod, but I can go handheld with those phones. So I'm way behind on finishing the Xiaomi review because I can't stop using it to do other things. It's really rough. It's been pretty tough. It's a good problem to have because it's a very good piece of camera tech. From Dave Burns, I seriously do not understand why people are still buying the Pro model of these phones other than as a fashion flex. Well, but that's also, I think, kind of important. We've been selling people on bestest cameras, right? I mean, how many times do you walk into a conversation and it's like, but it's the best camera? And you're like, by no criteria is this the best. It's very good. I mean, I actually just got another. It was actually a really lovely exchange. This is what, I'm not picking on this person in the Apple subreddit, but I was trying to explain like the differences on pixel binning sensors, and someone was complaining about the aperture. Oh, but the aperture got smaller. Like, it didn't. The aperture on the iPhone 14 Pro is bigger than the aperture on the iPhone 13 Pro. But the iPhone 13 Pro has an f over 1.6, and this has an f over 1.8. And you're like, yes. Because math. You don't seem to understand how ratios work. So let me explain. And you know, that's the thing that burns me out as a techie. When I was really into commercial voiceover, I would write out an article explaining like how a USB microphone works, and I would review inexpensive USB microphones, and it didn't matter. Someone would come to my site, not spend any time looking through anything that I've written, see that I was some kind of informed individual on home recording, and then ask all of the same questions. And I could point them to articles, but after a point, you're just exhausted by this is how this works. And iPhone owners are catching up on technology that we've been taking for granted on Androids since the OnePlus 7 Pro. We've been dealing with pixel binning, larger sensors, with HDR stacking, like all of this technology. 4 years, the iPhone is finally taking a step on that kind of tech. So now, if I'm talking to iPhone owners about photography, I am talking to them about things that I have been familiar with for 4 years on Android. That is not fun for me. That's old. I want to be learning about new things coming out and experiencing like that. That's, I'm a nerd. Like I don't want to be talking about stuff from 4 years ago and explaining, well, okay, so you've got four groups of pixels in one color, and sometimes they can be used for different exposure values. And sometimes they're just one larger photo set. Oh, I want to evolve from there. But because Apple, I have to keep going back. But the exchange was really lovely because like it did, I feel like it did help kind of illuminate some of those changes. And I was in another conversation with someone in our cameras. And you're like, you guys are making fun of smartphone cameras, and Apple absolutely deserves scrutiny and laughter at some of their outlandish aspirational marketing claims, but photographers are increasingly starting to miss out on really fun cameras to use because smartphone cameras bad, her. And you're like, you don't know what you're talking about. And there's some really fun and exotic stuff. I mean, again, I was pointing more to the Vivo and to the Xiaomi, but like, optically, we've got phones that are within spitting distance of Micro Four Thirds. Only they fit in your pocket. So if you could take a Micro Four Thirds camera and put a 12mm lens at f2.8 in your pocket, that's what this phone shoots, which is kind of a remarkable carry camera. Like, that's insane. But again, phone camera's not as good. Anyone younger than me, they're going to learn about photography through their phone. You know, Malcolm Gladwell, he had 10,000 hours of experience, how you learn to be a better photographer. Say it's, you know, your first 50,000 images. Well, you're going to learn how to frame, how to compose, how to handle light with your phone. Like, that's your starter camera. Oh, it drives me crazy. So, yes. Sorry. CopyCast, when people ask me to recommend them a phone, I always ask them, what's their budget and what are they planning to do with it? It's so tough, man. It's like, and they're very rarely able to articulate what it is that they might want. And more often than not, I'm trying to tell people, like, well, then just stick with what you've got. Don't spend more on another device to use it exactly the same way as the phone that you're currently using. Unless there's something that you're wanting to do, just go get it a battery replacement. That's probably all you need. Oh, that's a good call. Twin Folk Tech is saying the Nothing Phone 1, despite all the aggressive marketing, is actually a decent pickup for folks too. Got it working in the States perfectly fine on T-Mobile and Google Fi. That's great. It's not exactly the same. So Twin Folk Tech, that is factually incorrect. Twin Folk says the Vanilla 14 is the same damn phone from last year's iPhone 13, not even exaggerating. It has one whole extra GPU core, good sir. So you are incorrect. It is maybe 15% more powerful in GPU compute for multi-threaded GPU compute applications. You just got served. Boom. Someone was incorrect on the internet. Take that, Twin Folk. I'm way behind on these. Catching up. Oh, from Barry Johnson telling me I did it right. I'm always going to read the comments that tell me I'm very clever. Juan, you nailed it. It's almost like you are only jumping one generation. Maybe that's why Apple removed the physical SIM. I am sure the average consumer will be ecstatic with this move. Average consumers love that kind of stuff, right? Oh, interesting. I haven't heard too much about this. McCorkran 3, I still see tons of posts on the foldable subreddits where there's dead pixels all the way across the screen. Apparently the Z Fold 4 has a new hinge that's mixed some devices. Oh, that makes some devices squeak. So the Z Fold 3, the plastic, especially on that screen protector, would like smack at you. It would make like lip smacking noises. TK's, so I borrowed TK Bay's Z Fold 3, and I hated opening it, because if it rested against itself screen closed for any length of time, it would like peel itself apart again, and it would make this nah kind of sound every time you opened it. You'd have to open it and close it a couple times just to kind of wear it out, and then it would go away for a while, but if it rested, it would like stick itself back closed again. Oh, Barry, truer words, man. Math is hard for some people, unfortunately. Twin Folk Juan, the unlabeled bar charts at the Apple event told me that iPhone cameras are more betters. So I'm in that conversation. I'm explaining these different technologies and saying, like, hey, we've had experience with this stuff. And immediately I get a Samsung stan. yeah, but like Samsungs do this and then that. And then there's like a thread. It's like, yeah, but Samsungs have shutter lag. But Samsungs do this. But Samsungs do that. And you're like, but Samsung is an Android. And when I'm talking about these different cameras, I genuinely am talking about a bunch of different phones. And I broke it down. You're like, well, the ZTE did this, and my Sony did that, and my Pixel is this amazing point-and-shoot, and the Xiaomi is rocking my socks. And you're like, and the whole thread kind of like just died at that point. But it was like, guys, you got to understand, like, this is this bifurcation of Samsung v. Apple. It happened again on my Duo video. I did that Duo 2 follow-up 2022, and in the video I talk about, like, I think it's a bummer that the Duo doesn't have Android 12L yet, but there's very little coming to Android 12L that's going to improve the Duo. So much of the Duo is custom code, and someone up Samsung's rear could not help themselves. Well, you're actually incorrect, because a Samsung device had this one feature on Android 11 before the Duo did. And you're like, yeah, because Samsung wrote custom code, not because Android had it, but because a Samsung had it. And what I said in my video was Android is going to be adopting the features that Microsoft and Samsung did first in custom code. And that's not a huge benefit to Microsoft, that 12L is just replicating the things they already did with custom UI. Samsung is not Android. Samsung is Samsung. And increasingly, it just seems like Samsung is just desperate for iPhone attention. I mean, those new ads that Samsung put out. I mean, like, how thirsty can you be for someone to pay attention to you? Because your premium phone sales are not good. And you really desperately want some of that Apple cash. But it seems the more you make your phones like Apple, the less you sell, Samsung. So maybe stop with the snarky, bullying advertising and instead make more compelling phones that people will want to buy. Because that's apparently how free market stuff works. Oh, Giappico, man. It feels that way sometimes. I celebrate your patience and willingness to help the uninformed, but it's futile. There is no reason behind most of their opinions. It's a religion. Yeah, but there are a few people out there. Every now and then you reach someone and you're like, oh, that felt good. It's a very short-lived victory, but it does feel good. It's tough. It's real tough. Yeah, Barry, for real, man. Anyone sitting here and acting like iPhones are objectively better for video. Barry writes, I love the iPhones for video outside, but I do B-roll indoors and out, and I, like Juan, have also switched to the Vivo and Xiaomi for B-roll video now. It's so good. The iPhone 14 Pro might catch up to where I was with the Vivo, but I've already been shooting on the Vivo, and it's definitely not going to catch up to the Xiaomi, so I'm good. There's nothing about an iPhone 14 Pro from a professional standpoint that's going to drag me back over. It's crazy. Oh, and Twinfolk, the video on the Pixel 6 Pro is also really fun. So I like the Vivo better, but there is the stabilization settings on the Pixel 6 Pro are really fun to tweak. So if you do cinematic pan, it does a high-speed 4K video sampling and then slows it down. So it's 30 frames per second, but it still looks pretty good when I throw it into a 60 frame per second timeline. And you just hold the phone and your subject and you sort of slowly pan like that. And then it slow motions your movement, but it does it with like hyper stability. And it does look pretty close to like putting your phone on a tripod and doing a fluid head pan. It looks really good. Anyone who's still like, but Pixel video is garbage, must have defective eyeballs. Like, they're just telling you. Believe them, because they are telling you that they are awful at tech opinions. There's no point in arguing with them, because they're right. They are genuinely bad at photography and tech, if that's their takeaway. Tech loving mama, but my Samsung. Well, but Tech 11 Mama actually knows what she's getting. I think too many of these people are just Samsung stands that have no concept of what else is out there. But again, someone told them that they were clever and patted them on the head for owning Samsung, and they felt really good about that. So hearing about anything different means that they've got to wade in with their opinion. What was the other one? I got another comment where I was like, yeah, but Samsung this. And you're like, yeah, you understand this is a duo video. You can tell it's a duo video because I'm holding up two Microsoft Surface Duos, and in the title of the video it says Surface Duo. So later, when I do a Fold video, you should see Fold in the title of the video. That's how you can tell what the video's about. So if I'm making a video about the Duo, I'm going to talk about the Duo. I'm not going to make a video about the Duo and then go, but Fold owners, you guys are real clever. Aren't you special snowflakes for owning Folds? Good job, Fold owners. No, because it's a Duo video. Oh, Sveticus. It's going to be hard for me to leave my Pixel 6 Pro for anything, but the one thing the iPhone does do better than any other phone is video recording. Android just can't compare. I still have iPhone 6 1080p videos that look better than some of my current 4K videos on my Pixel. I mean, you might feel that way, but I'm telling you, man, I've been shooting heavy on all this stuff for a couple years now, and especially with sensor size improvements. What you're saying is you like the image processing. So you might like the color and the contrast, the saturation, the structure. Sure. If you're familiar with that and you like what the iPhone puts out, cool. But I'm talking about composing a scene, looking at the optical characteristics of the lens and the depth of field and the bokeh and what makes an image more interesting to me. And Apple hasn't been it for a while. I started really kind of souring, not just sort of floating when it came to the iPhone XS. The iPhone XS was the sort of redheaded stepchild of all the iPhones, never got a night mode, never really got major camera improvements. And from there on, I've been looking heavily at like, well, what else shoots video? And all of these mega sensor phones, you've had to put up with some teething pains. Like Apple's 4 years behind on larger sensors with pixel binning technology. But especially over that time, we've seen not only radical improvements, but insane new capabilities. In short bursts, I've got an $800 ZTE that shoots 4K 120. So if I want that super, super creamy, slow motion, high resolution image, can't get it from an iPhone. And if you're telling me, well, you could install another app, then what was the point of using the iPhone? If I'm shooting through Filmic, I can shoot through Filmic on a bunch of other phones. So again, that's the personal preference. But when we look at the optics of what makes a camera a better performer, that's where I'm kind of pushing Android. You might have to put up with some limitations on things like clip length. I'm sure an iPhone can outperform an 8 Gen 1 in a straight up 4K 60 video recording test. Cool. But if I want the look and characteristic of a phone that's running an 8 Gen 1, then I want that look and characteristic, and I'm not going to get it from an iPhone just because the clip is longer. So that to me is like framing the conversation based more on what do you need and what do you want rather than just lazily proclaiming one phone a winner. Because also when you look at like what happens in iPhone land, you run into way more issues with things like automatic exposure values. So even when you use Filmic, Filmic had to say like, hey, we had to cut the telephoto camera because Apple really wouldn't give us access to the telephoto. So for a while there, iPhones, you couldn't shoot telephoto because of Apple. There are still issues with auto exposure. So if you set your frame and you try to lock your exposure, there are still instances where the phone can override, the camera hardware can override your third-party app. And you know what? That doesn't really happen to me on many of these camera-centric Android devices, especially not on a Sony. And I think that the Vivos have been pretty well-behaved considering the insane amount of automatic modes on the new Vivos. So again, it's so much more complicated than just the gooder video is iPhone. the more convenient video might be iPhone, the more familiar video might be iPhone, but if you know what you're looking for and you know what you want to shoot, I don't find it's not easier for me to get that on an iPhone. It's actually more difficult for me to get what I want. If I just don't care and I just push video record button and I want juicy colors for social media, the iPhones have been outstanding. That was a very rambly comment. I'm sorry.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
I wasn't calling you out, Tech Loving Mama. She says, I love Samsung, but I'm not blind or stupid. Some of these stands make people like me who do prefer Samsung over others look bad. It's such a rough group to be a part of because Samsung builds their marketing on bullying. They're doing it again. Oh, good job, Apple, but we've had 108 megapixels. And anyone who knows anything about cameras, like, that is such a non-starter. That's a useless metric. And you're making this the crux of your haha gotcha Apple marketing campaign because you just know a bunch of Samsung knights are then going to flock to Reddit and to YouTube and be like, 108 better than 48, 108 better than 48. And they all just need to be lined up and you just like on a little moped, you just get like a mannequin hand so that you don't hurt your own hand. And you just line them all up on this path and you have your mannequin hand on a stick and you just stooge slap all of them at like 30 miles an hour. Just tick, 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 tick. Because anyone who's like just so desperate and thirsty to be on the winning team.
I own a Samsung because I'm really good at doing specs and memorizing GSM arena.
That's all they're worth. That's it. They're just a convenient marketing extension of a company that tries to bully not just the other competitors in their space, but also the employees of those companies and the customers of those employees. And it's never been a good look. It was a bad look when it was Mac versus PC for the Apple commercials, and eventually Apple killed it because the PC became a more sympathetic character over the run of those commercials. And it was always a bad look for Samsung outright making fun of Apple customers and Apple employees. I don't want to reward that kind of marketing, and I think Samsung is really punitive with tech reviewers that step outside the lines of promoting their brand. Oh, dude, Twinfolk Tech. 4K 120 home videos on my OnePlus 10 Pro of my nieces and nephews playing together brings a tear to my eye. Again, I mean, like, when she gets older, I might share some more of those kinds of videos, but, like, I took Lex to a park and we built a little glider. You know, one of those little styrofoam gliders, and I caught it the first time she managed to throw it and get a perfect loop-de-loop, 4K 120, slowed it down, 30 frames per second, 4K video, razor sharp. Oh, it's crystal clear video. And you can see her watching it do the full loop-de-loop. I'm freaking out in video right now. And just as it's coming back down, she does this like jump in the air, fist pump, slow motion. It's glorious. Wouldn't have been able to get that shot on an iPhone. Man, the iPhone version of that video would have been way less good. Oh man. Okay, so we're getting into kind of the wrap up here, and I just wanted to spend more time kind of talking about some of these other devices and stuff. But Xperia 5, I got the video torture test out. Oh, Giappico! And I missed it. JMan150 also did a gift sub too, but Giappico just gifted subs to Pakostin, Nozi, Archile, Sveticus, and Murchin, Tranced for Life, Overlander, and Copacash. Giappico, thank you so much. That totally rocks my socks. That is a huge perk. That is a huge help, and I really appreciate everybody, but I really appreciate you supporting production on this channel. Major thumbs up, man. I can't thank you enough. That was really sweet. That was really cool. Yes, sorry. Getting into kind of the end of this here. Xperia 5, if we have questions about Xperia 5, I've just started cracking into Poco M5, and yes, and the Unihertz. So the Titan Slim as a little keyboard phone. Just a couple little thoughts on the Xperia 5 Mark IV. It's been interesting watching kind of the back and forth happen on Sony, because Sony courts a very specific kind of audience. There's a very heavy camera feature, camera focus. There's a very specific kind of performance focus, and not a lot of phones really work this way. Like what I would do, I would probably say the closest competitors in terms of like CPU and GPU would be Xperia 5 and Motorola. Or I should say Xperia 1 and 5 and Motorola's. Like a Motorola, if you tell it to do something, it will run the full power of the chip to finish the task that you told it to do. I've got some other phones. Like I've got a Vivo, the iQOO 9T. Technically, the iQOO 9T is more powerful, but it manages that chip way more than the Motorola does, and so the Motorola ends up beating it in most tasks. Sony is cut from a similar cloth, and when you really use the phone heavy, you've got the 5G going, you've got the screen brightness on auto, you've got the frame rate turned up to 120 hertz, you're trying to rock those cameras, you're shooting 4K at 120 frames per second, that is all super data intensive, and the phone basically just ramps it to its maximum. And we should expect that that's going to have an impact on battery longevity and also thermal load. It's going to throttle faster because the phone is operating at a higher tier for longer periods of time. So if we can't approach that conversation with at least that level of nuance, like think it took me about a minute, right, of just sort of working out in my brain, what is it that makes a Sony a little bit different? Then we're really not doing a good job of talking about these products for other consumers. If you pick up a Sony and you don't really look at what it's doing, but then you say, oh, but another phone did this better, then you're not really comparing oranges to oranges. And so if you go to my video and you look at the thermal test, just shooting 4K 60 and 4K 120, I'm comparing the Sony against the Axon 40, the OnePlus 9 Pro, the OnePlus 10 Pro, the Xiaomi 12S Ultra, and the Pixel 6a. Like, I've got a bunch of different devices that shoot different qualities of video, different frame rates, different bit rates. I mean, there's a lot going on. But when you really break it down, Sony is doing something very specific that other manufacturers aren't doing the same. So it makes the comparison a little bit more difficult. I still have to put a very limited recommendation on the Xperia 5. If you come to me and you say, like, what I really care about is battery life and longevity, and I like good cameras, but I take mostly, like, snapshotty point-and-shoot. Anyone who's like, oh, but just put Gcam on there. At this point, I'm going to say, just go get a Pixel. $450, baller powerful device, very good cameras. Why are we pretending that we should buy another phone and then put Google camera software, which is not optimized for that phone, on another phone? if you buy a Sony, you really should buy it for what a Sony does that is unique. And to me, that is a narrower recommendation, but the people who are interested in that have a phenomenal option at their disposal. Similarly, if you want something that's kind of in this Sony adjacent packaging, but you don't want to spend as much and you're okay with some errors in your video, some more dropped frames, variable frame rates, the phone that actually kind of surprised me the most was the Axon in that test. And you'd save $100 off the price of an Xperia 5. So what is it that we're trying to accomplish? What is it that we're trying to do? And if the Sony solution is right for you, then the only game in town is a Sony. It's not like, hey, I love everything that the Sony does, but you know what I'm really going to do is I'm going to go and get a Samsung. If you really do like what the Sony does, the Samsung is going to be miserable. Like, it's going to be a very bad fit for your needs. I love everything that the Sony is doing, but you know what I really need is a Pixel. Wouldn't make any sense at all. But if you're telling me, like, hey, I want Gcam, and I want better HDR processing, and I want better auto modes, and I need this kind of performance, and I love what's going on with the Google Assistant, well, then you don't really want a Sony. There you want a Pixel. So this is what's been so frustrating about trying to break down these conversations, because I'll say really nice things about the Sony, and then people are like, yeah, but you just love Sonys. You're like, yeah, I do. I do for very specific reasons. And if you also have very specific reasons for liking a Sony, then the Sony is the only phone you can buy. There's nothing else that competes like a Sony. There's nothing else in this price tier, this performance tier, this camera tier that also has a headphone jack. Immediately, if like that's the kind of run and gun that you're trying to accomplish, then the Sony is curb stomping every other option out there. Or if you want to be able to add more storage, what a wonderful feature. And you know what? I've got a bunch of phones on my desk that could handily benefit from my ability to pop in a memory card just to save video files, and I can't do it. And it drives me crazy. I'm looking at the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. That should really have a memory card slot on it. If it's really that camera-centric a device, 256, 512, kind of not good enough. Over the life of that phone, I have to manage it way more. So again, I want us to have that as a broader chat, as a broader conversation. The phone that I've kind of come back, I'm looking at it, and it's just so close to something that I would really nerd out on. And I'm worried that the more I use it, the more I'm not gonna like it for how close it is. Some really, really early thoughts on the Unihertz Titan Slim. It looks like it should be kind of a follow-up or a competitor to the BlackBerry Key 2, but it's just that little bit smaller that it doesn't really feel like a Key 2 competitor. There was an old Tic Tac keyboard Motorola way back in the day. I mean, we're talking like Galaxy S2 era. I can't even remember what it was called. And I think there was one on Sprint. It feels to me like it reminds me a little bit more of that. Like the keys are that much smaller. It's a low power device. Retail, I want to say, is around $350, which is pretty remarkable given the hardware keyboard. This is the thing that always bothered me about Key 2 reviews is like, oh, but you can get a more powerful phone for less. And you're like, yeah, but it doesn't have a keyboard. What is the price of a keyboard stapled to your phone? Because if you're not going to factor that into your price comparisons, then you're not really a good techie. Like, you're really bad at this. So I'm going to spend a little bit more time with the Unihertz. And I feel like it's a phone that kind of deserves... I don't want to use a word like scrutiny, but it's like I feel like I've got to dissect this a little bit more, because I feel there's still room in this market. If you want a messaging-focused device, a full-QWERTY keyboard is a pretty good benefit. If like the majority of what you're doing is like tacking out little emails and replies and instant messages and text messages. There's a lot to like about a tactile experience that facilitates that. And so beyond that, I also just kind of want to wrap my brain around, like, I'm sure the cameras are just okay. I'm sure the speaker performance is just okay. I think that's an IR blaster through the top of the case. And it is, it for being called a slim. So who said it? Someone said, was it Giappico? Slim, that's kind of chunky. Now, this is not a thin device, but it is narrow. Hold on, let me see if I can put this up. What would be a good... So, like, here's my Xperia. And I have it in the case. Hold on, let me take it out of the case. It's very cylindrical. It's a very cylindrical kind of device. You can see, like, how it really curves around on the edges. But the actual footprint is very similar to the Xperia 5 Mark IV. So the Xperia 5 Mark IV is ever so slightly, like, I think we're talking like a fraction of a millimeter skinnier. So I think that's why they're calling it a slim. It's not slim in this dimension, but it is slim in this vertical, in this portrait dimension, orientation, whatever word. And then lastly, just for future videos and reviews coming up, I'm a little frustrated. I just got a video out on the Poco M4 5G, and now the Poco M5 is out, and it feels, it feels very similar to the M4 5G. So I'm going to spend a little time just kind of playing with it. The main difference seems to be this kind of like, faux leather texture. It kind of looks like a D-brand skin on the M4. But I do like this visor assembly. So we've got the cameras in this full lateral, full width camera housing across the entire back. I really like that. And I wish, I don't know if I can get my camera to focus on that. I really wish more manufacturers would give us full width like that, because it radically reduces the table wobble when you put it down camera side. It doesn't go waka 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 when you try to use it. And I just think it looks cool. Like, I think that that's a really great design. I've loved it ever since the Aiku started doing full width. I think it looks real sharp. So it's a minor texture difference. It's a different MediaTek processor. And then it kind of feels like the same phone that Poco has been putting out since the very, very first M4, which was like end of last year. So we've gone almost an entire year on different phones called M4, and now the M5 comes out and it feels very much like an M4 with a different texture on the back. So again, I really love the Poco mission, but I think one of the things that kind of hurts the perception of the brand is it's like you've got to be on the bleeding edge of research. So when you buy the newest Poco, you know you're getting kind of the package that is the most current of that company, but you know they're going to come out with another phone in like a month, and there are going to be a bunch of devices with similar names all out at around the same time. Like, if I'm remembering correctly, there were four different variations on Poco M4, and I bet you there was a lot of overlap on when they were sold. And now we're going to see an M5 next to an M4 5G. And, well, what's the difference? I guess the M5 is one better, so I'll get the M5. But the M4 might be actually a better phone for someone's needs or for someone's budget. I mean, it's that kind of consumer confusion that I think is really difficult to express in a video, because ultimately the phones do well. I think the phones live up to the expectations made by the marketing of the company, but I feel like the consumer conversation is so much more difficult for how many devices they put out all at the same time with kind of the same features and just very minor part swaps between all of the different labels. Dave Byrne says it looks like it has a week's. Oh, you're talking about the Unihertz. It looks like it has a week's battery built in. So the battery is not remarkable. It's a 4,000 milliamp hour battery, but it's on a low power MediaTek. And so the standby times, like I haven't run it with my SIM card for very long, but the standby times have been great. Just with very limited use, I think I've gone a week without charging it. Let me see if I can just pull up battery usage. So yeah, 5 days. It's been off the charger for 5 days and I'm at 50%. So this is not a screamer, high performance, thirsty SoC, 4,000 milliamp hour battery with a lower resolution, smaller screen. The screen brightness is okay for outdoor use, but it's not the brightest screen I've ever seen. Obviously, we're not talking about 120 hertz here. And so I think this is going to end up being like one of those battery life champs because it's such reasonable hardware. It's such low power, power efficient, but it's not going to be a great option if like, I need to play tons of games. What about Genshin? Can I play the Genshin Impact on it? And you're like, no, why would you want it? That's not the phone for this. That's a bad fit. So I think that'll be an interesting part of the conversation because as soon as I brought up Key 2, people would run out of their way to talk about the things that it couldn't do well. And you're like, yeah, but there are different devices that you would want to use to do those kinds of things really well. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that I couldn't get like a BlackBerry Priv follow-up where you had a premium tier, high performance, high horsepower SoC with the keyboard, maybe in a slider form factor, or like kind of like an LG Wing, you know, some kind of alternative method for interacting with the device, and then also have like a Snapdragon 865 or 870 or 888. It would be nice. But so far, the messaging style of use doesn't seem like the people who are really interested in an all-day communicator phone are also out there telling people like, well, what I also need to do is play like PlayStation 4 era graphics video games. Those two worlds don't seem to overlap like people tried to make them overlap. So again, for the purpose of what this thing's trying to accomplish, I think the parts are right. I'm trying to wrap my brain around how big that potential audience might be. Dave Burns, add a mouse to that Unihertz. Play Genshin Impact with a mouse and keyboard. The way it was meant to be played. Has anyone played Genshin with a mouse and keyboard? It seems like such a controller game to me. I don't know. I've literally spent minutes playing Genshin and then like, oh, this is not my jam. I don't like the structure of this game. I just don't. It's not for me. And again, I'm so much more. I actually did. If you're on the Patreon, patreon.com/somegadgetguy, I did just update the Android game list. So it's the list of games that I've played and enjoyed on Android in the Google Play App Store. And hold on. I don't know that I can screen share it. Hold on. I might be able to get a link for it real quick. No, I've got it pinned. Come on. Android game list. So let me get a link. Share. Share with people. Don't share with orangutans, but share with people. Good. I'm going to copy this link, and now I can throw it into... So this currently is my Android game list. So these are the sections that I've got it broken up by. Tower Defense and Strategy, Twin Stick Shooters, Bullet Hell, Arcade, and now I've added Survivor Clones. So like if you're into games like Vampire Survivors, there are some games coming to Android. Grim Knight is really good if you like that Vampire Survivor kind of vibe. I need to break this one up. I've got action, platformers, and runners, But in here, I also have like a mix of first-person shooters, so I really should split out first-person shooters. Fantasy and exploration, dungeon crawlers and an RPG, puzzle and casual. So many of these are flipping brilliant right now. Like Baba Is You, Before Your Eyes, Dragon Up, Hyperforma, Infamous Machine, Machinarium, Monument Valley. So there are some incredible gaming experiences in puzzle and casual. Then legit old school board games and card games, racing games, some battle royale and competition. I expanded on Sims, so simulation games. But then I also split out crafting, collecting, and farming. So like if you want to play Ark, Don't Starve, Forager, Minecraft, Stardew Valley, and just all kinds of really, really, really fun gaming experiences that are not predatory for microtransactions. Most of these games are premium. So like you pay once and then you play the game. But I have started noting like when a game is a Netflix subscription game, like Into the Breach, the Android port for Into the Breach is really good. It's a little turn-based sci-fi strategy. I'm not huge on turn-based strategy. It's really good. There's this cute little indie game where you're fighting alien bugs on these small little map sections. Man, it's so good. So again, that's a Netflix property, but there are no microtransactions. There are no ads. If you're subscribed to Netflix, you've got this incredible indie game that you can play. And you should, because you're already paying for it. So that kind of stuff, I've just expanded all of that on the list. But if you go to patreon.com/somegadgetguy, you can catch that full list of all of the games that Juan has wasted money on his Android phones. So I think that's probably where we need to wrap this up. Oh no, I opened up Word and now there's like a dozen Word documents that I'm currently working on. I am so behind on so much stuff. There we go. Yeah, Tech Loving Mama. My son plays it on his PC with his keyboard. I guess Genshin is good to play on mouse and keyboard. Excuse me. So, lots of stuff going to be coming out. Hopefully tomorrow on the public YouTube channel, I'll have my review out for the U-Perfect, the new U-Perfect laptop dock. So I'm really excited about that. I've got a video coming out. There was another audio piece of tech, some earbuds. I'm going to be spending some time on the Unihertz, probably putting together a review, but also just kind of an overview on the Poco M5, and then some sponsored content. I actually have another sponsor that's going to be working with the channel to talk about, hopefully, fingers crossed, over the next week, maybe not this week, but probably next week, some VR and AR tech. So that could be a lot of fun, just to kind of put that on your radars, that Gadget Guy is going to try and broaden some of his gadget categories a bit more than just mobile. So tons and tons and tons and tons of stuff. And then also I'll be shooting out some videos for reviews.org and Slick Deals. I'm going to be heading back into the Slick Deals office to shoot some stuff too. So man, it's pretty good. We got some good stuff to talk about, some really fun tech, and some really great accessories. And again, I feel like that's going to increasingly be a bigger part of the conversation. Maybe you don't need to flip your phone every 3 years. Maybe what you just need to do is expand on how you use your phone, and you buy a couple little pieces for it, and then that all gets better for having better accessories. So be on the lookout. Tomorrow should be Gadget Goddess doing her live stream tomorrow afternoon. Wednesday should be Easy Computer Solutions. Thursday is Ike Talks Tech. Obviously, TK and I will be streaming Best of Our Week. And I think Easy is also doing like a podcast stream on Thursdays now. Fridays are LaShawn. And I think someone else is streaming on Fridays. Is someone else streaming on Fridays? I can't remember. And then Saturday should be TK Bay again for Saturday morning. And then we're back in this week for me on Mondays. You've got Tech Valor. Thank you, Barry Johnson. Tech Valor is also going to be doing a regular Friday stream. There are so many brilliant conversations happening right now with tech. It really is the fun of expanding on this stuff, as opposed to just like, oh, I only make videos about Samsung and Apple. There's so much more to kind of dig into. So you'll probably also see me lurking in all of the chats and comments on all of those streams. So I want everybody, I need you to have an amazing week. I kind of need it personally, so I'm putting that pressure on you. If I don't have a good week, Juan will be sad. So you don't want to make Juan sad. I really feel like you need to have a good week so that I can appreciate the good week that you had. I got weird and deep. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in, for joining, especially this chat. This conversation has been amazing. Be on the lookout for incredible commentary across tech YouTube that might not always be served up to you via the algorithm. I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be safe, take care of yourself so that you can take care of others, and be that great tech neighbor that I know you are. We're in short supply, and people out there really need the help, even if they're not always asking for it. I'll catch you back here next week. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.